Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to the Philanthropy as a People's Business podcast, brought to you by Prospectus and Catalytica Consulting. In this series, we dive into vital issues for the philanthropic sector with inspirational and innovative leaders globally. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Børge Andreasen, my partner in managing this show. Børge is Managing Director of Prospectus, an executive search consultancy working globally, which is specializing in connecting people with purpose, helping organizations find and appoint board directors, chief executives, and other leaders, and supporting with board effectiveness consultancy.
Thank you so much, Olaf, and a real pleasure to be with you. Olaf is the co-founder and co-chief executive of Catalytica Consulting, which is a boutique consulting firm headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland. They support philanthropists and philanthropic foundations, public donors, governments, and corporations in the areas of partnership building and facilitation, community management, strategy development, program delivery and evaluation, and finally, client representation. Catalytica works globally, but with a particular focus on Europe and West Africa.
Today's podcast is focused on climate philanthropy, which is a relatively new aspect of philanthropic engagement. It is true that due to the diligent work of many, including the worldwide philanthropic community, the previous few decades have seen great advances in social justice and improved living standards. However, as the Earth warms, these hard-won advantages are jeopardized. Climate change is already exacerbating existing disparities and making the challenges which societies face today and in the future even more difficult to address. This is a major reason why philanthropists have started to look at ways of how to engage in this context. I am very pleased to welcome two distinguished guests to this edition of our podcast, to what I think will be getting deeply into the topic of climate philanthropy. Caroline Mason, the CEO of SME Fairbairn Foundation, which is one of the largest independent funders in the United Kingdom. Caroline, a very warm welcome to you. I'm so glad to have you on air with us today.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And Natalie Morrell, CEO of the Climate Now Foundation, which is a relatively new foundation based in Switzerland, and which is entirely focused on climate. Natalie, so great to have you with us on this podcast today. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me, Olaf.
Caroline and Natalie, you both started your careers in the commercial world before shifting towards the impact space. Maybe tell us a little bit more about your motivations for this. And let's maybe start with you, Caroline, right?
Yeah, so my background was in financial services, and I became increasingly aware that financing mechanisms are all fine. They're just mechanisms. It's what you do with those mechanisms that matter. And I was increasingly unhappy with the way that the financial services was thinking about broader issues. And so I decided to try and shift my experience from investment to actually setting up something called Investing for Good, which is it was a consultancy firm, but how to advise people on how to invest their money in a different way. And that was my motivation.
And how did that go? Did it come with another promotion?
Well, I can honestly say that this was like almost 20 years ago. So it's long before impact was even a consideration in investment. And I would go around together with my colleague, Jeff Bernand, sometimes on my own. And people would say, gosh, what a lovely thing to do. Well done, you. How interesting. Do let us know how you get on. Which is basically no. So it was a really, really difficult, actually, to keep that momentum. But actually, we were just ahead of our times, and we managed to kind of, you know, we created some very interesting products and models, which are still being used today, and Investing for Good is still around today. So that was the beginning of my journey.
Fascinating, Carolyn. Thank you so much for sharing that experience. Natalie, I wonder, how did it go for you in that transition? I believe you also have made between the commercial and the impact world.
Well, I didn't get that much of an applause. People told me I was nuts and insane to leave strategy consulting and leave a career behind. It could be so prosperous, and why I would want to go and save the world. My background was also, you know, I studied business administration, went to financial services, worked in London, then went to strategy consulting with like the big consultancy firms. And at some point, I just thought, after every single case I'm working on, what am I leaving behind? What is my legacy? What is my value add here? And the whole making profitable companies a little bit more profitable just didn't cut it for me. And that was for me the point where I said, okay, with what I have studied and with what I have learned now in my career, I'm sure there's something else I can do with it that makes more sense. And I didn't even know the word philanthropy then or impact investing. And I just stumbled across, you know, a book that was about social entrepreneurs that shared the stories of, you know, people coming from different careers and places that could do something good with it and something meaningful. And then I thought, well, you know, even me as a former bad consultant can do something good. So I found that very inspiring, and storytelling in general is. And I think that that's the one thing that has kept me really going in this sector. You know, all those very inspiring people that sometimes work magic with so little.
Can I ask you, because I had a similar feeling that my last job was with a wealth manager, and I was thinking, I'm spending my time making rich people even richer.
Yeah.
Is that really what I want to do for the rest of my life? And that idea of using the skills, because they are good skills to have, and I'm glad I had that time and built them. But how do you use them in a different way? You know, that's, and you're right, the inspirational stories of these amazing people. I absolutely get where that feeling of, oh my goodness, there's this whole other world here, and they are, it's fantastic and inspirational. So yes. How can I be part of that?
I agree. And I think you're touching upon a very important thing, is that it's not like I shifted completely. It's I took what I had as tools and just used them to construct and build something else. It's not like I said, well, I'm going to go to a school in Africa and teach kids, because that's not what I'm good at. I'm good at, you know, choosing investments, doing due diligence, having the business perspective in things, being very strategic and structured about. And so that's the things I wanted to really bring into the new sector that I worked with. And I think for other people who, I get approached a lot by people who are in that transition and ask me, what do you think I should do? And I say, well, A, I'm not going to tell you what you should do, but B, just bring your assets with you, you know, don't leave them behind and jump into the cold water to do something else. You know, you can swim just with what you have.
That's fantastic. And that's really inspirational. I'm sure many people will want to follow in those footsteps, or create their own footsteps into a sort of impact career. If we start with you, Natalie, could you tell us a bit about the foundation you set up, Klima Now, what you do and so on?
Sure. So Klima Now is a Swiss foundation based in Zurich. And we are very young, as you already mentioned in the introduction. We were founded about 2 years and 3 months ago. So we are young but very ambitious and quick in what we do. And so maybe I'll start with what we envision, because this is like our North Star. We really envision a society that lives within the planetary boundaries and has learned to respect them and has been able to limit, you know, global warming to 1.5 degrees. And we truly want to contribute to that. We want to contribute to the Paris Agreement goals of cutting emissions in half by 2030. That already gives you the perspective of, you know, we have another 7 years to reach that. So we have a very concrete mission. And we want to contribute to that mission by, you know, we finance climate solutions through venture capital investments, but also through donations. And we're very loud about those solutions. So we showcase them because we believe that solutions need to be shared rather than just the doomsday scenario. And lastly, what we also believe is in democratizing climate ideas and decision-making processes with a large community. So we want to create and build a large community around Klima Now. Concretely, we're aiming for 100,000 people in the next 5 years. So those are the basics of what we do. And what is a bit special about us is while we are a charitable foundation by structure, I always say by heart and by culture, we very much work like a venture. So even though we're young, we have accomplished many things already, and not because we're so great. I mean, yes, we are, but also because we go about it in a different way. We dare to try out things, to pilot things, to fail. They're not afraid of failing. We pivot, we learn, we try again, and we fortunately have a board that has that appetite to get that done. And that's how we feel we learn fast. And this is very particular about how we work and who we are.
Well, thank you, Natalie. And Caroline, in the UK, ESME is well known and I would say much loved foundation, but how would you introduce it to somebody who'd never heard of ESME Fairbairn before?
So I would say that we are an independent philanthropic foundation, that we are focused on nature, social justice, and communities, but more importantly, the intersection between all of those. So we have a very strong record on social justice, because I think previously we've always been known as a social justice organization, but we have been involved in both environmental nature funding and more importantly, food and food systems funding for about 15 to 20 years. So that, if you like, was definitely a specialization that we had. And we were the largest funder. We have been the largest funder of UK environmental work since then. I think we have a very clear, two kind of clear models. One is that we fundamentally believe that we're facilitators of things, of good things. And so our job is to find the best people and to support the best people, the best collaborations, the best initiatives that we can to build that collective action across everything that we do. Secondly, that we really believe that people know best, the experts know best, we have some expertise. So all of our funding tends to be, or most of it tends to be unrestricted, long-term. We don't ask for any bespoke reporting. It's very much, we see it as a partnership. And then finally, we have moved from being a grant maker to what we call being a catalyst for change. And we're working across the entire spectrum of capital that we have. So all the way from grant making to social investment, impact investment. And we are just now working with our significant endowment to transition that towards responsible, environmentally responsible portfolio. And then the other final thing is that we don't tend to fund delivery of services. We tend to fund, I call it topping and tailing. So at the top end, we fund a lot of activists, a lot of campaigning organizations that are trying to dismantle the systems that are just not working. Increasingly, evidently not working. And then at the bottom level, we are funding new and investing in new models, new products, new practice, disruptive practice, unusual collaborations. So bringing in the private sector, the public sector, and the NGO sector together to try and build momentum from the bottom and show how things could work, you know, circular economy models, all of that, show how those could work in the future. So it's kind of bringing down the old systems at the top and reinventing them at the bottom.
Amazing. Thank you. I'm sure it's music to many charities and nonprofit ears that you do unrestricted funding, what everybody wants, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much indeed. And let's dig a little deeper now. Natalie, maybe I can turn it back to you. You're the co-founder of Klimanow Foundation, and you've been sharing the vision of the organization with us here on the podcast. I'd now like to know a little bit more about what exactly inspired you and maybe other people with you to create this organization and to focus it entirely on climate.
Well, I was working as a, or I had been working as an independent impact investing consultant for 8 years when I first thought about Klimanow, which was an idea and didn't have a name yet. And throughout all those years working, you know, I had set up my own consultancy, I had had teams, but more on partner level. You work on different mandates, as you know now, Olaf. You have been on this journey now for a good year. And this is, it's very rewarding, but also it comes with the challenge that you are never really sitting in the same boat with other people. You kind of bring your boat next to theirs and you help them navigate some waters, but then you're always in your own boat. And somehow I really wanted to build a team again and be together in one boat to, you know, to affect impact regarding a specific topic that was close to my heart. And close to my heart also, I think becoming a mother has, it sounds very cheesy, but it's true. You know, I there's only one planet and I'm gonna, you know, leave something behind, and SDG 13 is just overwhelmingly urgent, cannot be ignored, is cutting through all other SDGs and will impact everybody and everywhere. So it seemed to me also this desire to focus my energy and my impact for the time that we now have, where we can still, you know, get in the right, on the right track regarding climate change, to focus my energy there. And in the collaboration with clients, I worked very closely with a family that is very dear to my heart, the family Miley in Switzerland. And there were three brothers and one of them passed away. And I guess that triggered on their end also the question, what are we going to do with the rest of, you know, our time and money that we have? They had been doing impact investments for a long time, but also across many different topics. And somehow together we came to that conclusion, we want to focus. We want to focus and we want to build something together that matters. And I kid you not, on two pages we wrote down an idea, and with that we got another two families on board, and with that we got 9 million Swiss francs committed as donations to start something that was really a raw idea. So it sounds a bit magical, but that's how it went.
Fascinating. Thank you so much. And to our listeners, let us remind ourselves that the Development Goal 13 is to take urgent action to combat climate change and its impact.
Thanks for clarifying, Olaf.
And Caroline, I believe in Esme Fairbairn's latest strategy, you sort of moved more towards the climate nature space in terms of the share of your funding you spend on that. Can you tell us a bit about that journey and how that's going?
Yes, we decided to really take a step back. This was 2 or 3 years ago, and really consult very widely and deeply about where, I always call it, what people thought our place was in the bigger picture, and also what role could we play better going forwards. And we really consulted widely, people we fund, people we don't fund, people who are like regulators and local groups, local authorities, to say, what do we do well? What do we don't do well? What could we do better? And both in terms of Esme, but also in terms of being a philanthropic organization where we have certain privileges and we have certain assets, which other people just don't. And then talking through that, people really helped us work out where we where we could contribute most, where we had the expertise, legitimacy, and also where we could genuinely add value. And we looked at things like our risk tolerance, our independence, our ability to innovate. So that was a sort of quite a freeing conversation, which allowed us to say, right, there are lots of people doing social justice. I'm not saying it's not important, but there are lots of people involved in that. There aren't a lot of philanthropists involved in the environment, nature, food, biodiversity, etc., pollution. We've got a long history of that. We are expert in that. We also understand the link between social justice and environmental justice, which again, I would say was not well known in the foundation world. They were seen as two completely separate things, whereas we got the links with health, with education, and all of those things. And then finally, that idea that we're not going to solve these problems at all unless we get communities absolutely core and central to how this gets designed for the future. So my question when people talk about the just transition framework, which everybody talks about, is if it's about being fair, where do communities and people have a say in what that looks like? Because if that's not included, we're not going to get this right. So for us, it was really breaking apart that thinking and reconstructing it again into this idea that we can link nature, social justice, and community regeneration and activism into delivering the kind of different outcomes that we want to work on. It took a quite long time to do. The other thing is that shift from just being a grant maker to that idea that we can use, these are all different mechanisms, they're all different financing mechanisms, whether it's social investment, repayable grants, impact investing, social investing, our endowment, our voice, our view. Previously, we had no view on everything or anything. Now we have a very clear direction of what it is that we think is good. So that was a real shift. It took quite a long time. And to be honest, we're still working bits of it out. But at its core, it's saying that as a philanthropy, we can do things that other people can't. And our responsibility is to do that. Is to take the risk that people can't, is to do the things that are very unfashionable or very controversial. But that's our job to do. Our job is basically a facilitator, a risk absorber, and a kind of an R&D almost for the future. And that's how we came to our current strategy.
Caroline, that's super exciting to see. And I'm really glad you've shared this journey with us here. Listening to you both and looking out of the window here and listening to the news, I think we all just get the impression that we're looking at probably the most important challenge to humankind. If we look at climate change, right? It seems something so big and actually global that, at least to me, it looks a bit difficult to find out what you can actually do as a foundation to meaningfully contribute, you know, to this change. Caroline, maybe you can go a little deeper into that direction. What actually can be the significance of climate action supported by you with that framework you've been sharing with us?
So first of all, it's working in partnership with other people. So I can give two examples where actually a relatively small amount of money has had significant effect. So the first one is, as a result of bringing together Tesco's and Client Earth, who you would think would be completely at odds with each other, but having a session with them and a group of chief execs of foundations to make the point that this is a really interconnected world. And the person from Climate Earth said, I used to work with refugees around the world, but I realized that the key driver for migration is climate change. So that's the root cause. So I need to start working on the root cause. And the person from Tesco's said, there are things that we can do and things that we can't do. And so we want to work better with people who can do the things that we can't do. And as a result of that, for the cost of, I don't know, £20,000 or something, we worked with a consultant to create the Funder Commitment on Climate Change, which is a kind of structure which you have to report against, covered 6 points. And it started off with 5 foundations signing it. Now it's over 100 around the world. So that's a tiny amount of money. But because it was done in a very collaborative, open way, kind of learning, it's not a judgmental way. It's just saying these are all the things you can do. I think it's going to have a ripple effect, and it already has. The other example is we work with the Green Finance Institute here in the UK, building learning networks around investing in environmental outcomes and what that looks like. So we have this learning group called The Hive, where investors can come and understand more about how to embed impact into their investment decision processes. Again, I think that was about 300,000 over 3 years or something. It's not a huge amount of money, but the fact is that it's growing. It's kind of becoming the go-to place where you, if you want to find out how to embed impact into investment processes and how to think differently. So again, we don't feel our role is to do individual things. Our role is to catalyze movements and collaborations where we actually, if we don't get the credit for it, that's absolutely fine. We don't get. So it's much more working behind the scenes, I suppose, in terms of being able to support collaborations, partnerships, movements. So I feel that coming back to what are the things that foundations can do that other people can't, we can be the honest broker. We're not raising money. We have our own money. We can be the honest broker. We can convene people. We can set fund partnership work. So that's how we see philanthropy. And then, we can take the risks that other people can't. So we do a lot of work in terms of developing, you know, nature-based investment solutions, which are quite innovative, and just to show how you can create private sector plus public sector plus NGO collaborating together to create a model to get investment into nature-based solutions. And we take the risk on that, basically. So I'm not sure if that's clear, but I think there are many, many things that philanthropy can do. And I think we have to do them, because to your point, if we don't solve this, all of our social justice work is meaningless, because we won't have a world in which anyone can live. So I hope that makes sense.
Of course it does. Thank you so much, Caroline. Now, if you look at the international philanthropic landscape in our days, I believe not many foundations have yet fully engaged or even partly engaged on pathways comparable to what you've been describing. I'm aware of a study in Switzerland, for instance, which says that only 6 out of 100 foundations are engaged in the context of climate. And Natalie, I wonder why that is, and should that not change given the importance of the topic?
Of course, this has to change. I share your surprise and pain every time again when I, you know, hear the numbers. And actually, only 2% of global philanthropic giving goes to climate, which is absolutely ridiculous given the size of the challenge. Yes, it should change. And it's also difficult to change because not all foundations have the foresight like that Caroline describes, and not everybody is ready to jump on a new topic, which is not new because science has been preaching the same for over 30 years, but somehow it's discovered now. And so to mobilize the sector is important, but it's also hard. And I think many foundations hesitate because A, they don't know how to go about it, and they don't have the in-depth discussions like, you know, Caroline just described. You know, it takes a bit of courage to rethink everything every now and then, especially for established organizations. And also, I mean, they're all working on important topics. It's not like health and education suddenly becomes, and poverty is suddenly not important. So you have to choose between one or the other, or maybe you don't, but that's what they think. So I think it's about understanding that you don't have to drop priorities, but you can support priorities, and you have to. And there's, I think, Caroline, you mentioned something very important before. You know, there's intersections between the topics, and rather than seeing them as competitive, we have to understand where are the links between health and climate, between education and climate, and how can we make sure that foundations that have another priority than climate introduce a climate lens. But how can we also make sure that foundations like us, for example, who focus primarily on climate, can also benefit from all the years of experience and evidence and knowledge from foundations that are working in other spaces? How can we include the education lens when we support a solution that is at that intersection? And having, you know, sit down and having a look at those intersections, I think also lowers the barrier of my topic is more important than yours, or we only have so much funding. If we divide it, we're going to reduce our impact. And I would invite, you know, foundations to think about it differently, that it really is about understanding those intersections. And I feel foundations who support research could really provide good, you know, look into providing good data in those intersections, which is really missing at this point. And it could really help the philanthropic sector to advance quicker in making a shift and affecting impact more for all topics, really, rather than in seeing it in competition. And yes, at the end of the day, we are the ones who can take risks. And yet, at least in Switzerland, the sector is very conservative and doesn't like taking risks at all. Prefers to stick to project funding, where there's some output. Systemic funding is very difficult because you don't know where it's going, and it's a long-term thing. And big collaborations also means taking a step back from being in total control, but really collaborating. So I think being a bit more critical on the sector, yes, we need to be risk-taking. Yes, we want to collaborate. But the reality is that many times it doesn't happen. And we need to think about the ones that really do that need to help lower the barriers for others. And as long as we don't lower those barriers, and that thinking is still the same, where you compartmentalize, you know, SDGs, we will not get to a fast movement.
And I think, Caroline, you obviously talked a bit about the other things you can do. So it's not just about the money you can give out in grants or and so on. And I'm curious, and obviously that might have been, for a very established foundation, feel like a big change. And obviously, Natalie, you have a very new foundation. You're two years old. How do you see that sort of wider piece about engaging beyond the investment or the grants you can make?
I think this is absolutely vital, which is why we don't only finance climate solutions. So for us, we have three, I would call it like strategic anchors of what we do. And one is to really find the climate solutions and innovative ideas and finance them with whatever mechanism they need. But also what we do as well is we look at, you know, how can we support the right regulatory frameworks and policy work, and which is something that foundations don't like to touch that much, because it's risky, because you don't want to lose your charitable status and being somewhat related to politics, but policy can mean a lot of bigger things. And so we know for a fact that 80% of what we need to get done in climate change, in reducing our emissions, 80% of it will come through regulatory frameworks and the right policies. So we have to, if we want to really contribute, we need to take a proactive role here in shaping those policies. And that could be through supporting the right ideation processes in lawmaking in parliament. That can be providing quality public information through quality journalism on climate. That could be providing data to policymakers that can help them shape the right policies, such as we're looking at a study at the moment that we want to run here in Switzerland on climate damaging subsidies, not to get into a conflict, but to get into a discussion and say, this is what the facts are. Now, what do we need in the future? And so this policy piece is a tremendously important one, one of the biggest levers that we have, and that's why we engage in that. And the third part I already mentioned before is contributing to the social tipping point that we need. We really need to change people's minds and then actions. And you don't do that by doomsday scenarios and pointing fingers. You do that by giving them the opportunity to contribute. You create agency if you can design and co-design a future with them, if you empower them. And that's why the whole community piece for us is so important. And we run, for example, an annual award called Spotlights, and we invite the community to give answers to a question we have. And so ideas come up, and then we invite the community again to publicly vote for those ideas. And at the end, we have a event where 7 people pitch on stage, and they, you know, they were vetted by a jury, of course, because we also want credibility. And it's largely in the hands of the community to decide, A, you know, what ideas actually make it to what we call the Wall of Fame, and the other thing, which ones will make it to that pitch night. And we just see a tremendous interest in that. And in the very first year that we, at Climate Now, was set up, we had 17,500 votes. And we were not known. And so it just shows you the level of interest and engagement that, you know, people are willing to participate and to be part of it. It's just, if you just speak about, you know, very scientific data, big words, only policies or politics, then, you know, it's very hard to create agency. So for us, absolutely, it is very vital and important to combine different things. And that's the only way that we can change that system. There is no, that we will not solve climate change by project funding.
I think that message is getting across loud and clear from both of you.
Yeah, definitely. We should work together, Caroline.
Yeah,
I think that's my...
I absolutely get that. And also, I think your point about involving voices of people who often don't get heard in this debate or in this world, because it's kind of being dealt with up here somewhere, sort of macro kind of movements. But actually, there are things that people can do locally, community-wise, which are transformational. And so one of the things that we're working on is with 5 other funders. So there's 6 of us funding over 10 years in 6 places. But the difference in the model is that we have to respond collectively to each of those 6 places. So we have to be more than the sum of our parts as funders. Also, the money over those 10 years is delegated down to the communities, and we have no say in what happens, other than the idea that it has to be intersectional, it has to include different communities and the environment, for example. But actually, what they come up with is entirely their own kind of plan, and they make the decisions. We sit on there, on each of the 6 community coordinating groups, but that's for our learning. We have no decision making. And it's a real, that whole idea that it's a shift of power, that we really need to get to a point where these communities are absolutely core and central to what the future looks like for them across the board. And I think, to your point, that is really difficult to do, time consuming and difficult. But if you start, we're already seeing that, because we've been involved in it for 2 years now, we're already seeing other funders and other collaborations kind of coming, working with us to say, oh, how can we create a movement around this rather than just each funding individual initiatives? So again, I just think starting something, I think people, often philanthropy, people discuss things for a long time. Should we do this? Shouldn't we do this? Oh my goodness, what's the risk of doing this? I think we've broken away from that to say the only way you're ever going to find out those things is by actually giving it a go. And we're big enough and ugly enough to be able to kind of, you know, do that and just give it a go and see what works and what doesn't, and then see if you can build momentum around that. So again, that's a little bit of risk-taking, a bit of kind of absorbing the mistakes. And that's fine. As you said right at the beginning, it's okay to make mistakes. That's how you learn. So I think these new models of philanthropy are less about sort of, I call it a slightly Dickensian model, where you get some money, it's an annual gift to the worthy poor, you know, as opposed to actually we need to be catalysts of change.
Thank you, Caroline. And thank you, Natalie. I think that's been so interesting. Before we finish, I was wondering if you could share with us something that inspires you, or because there's a lot of difficult news on climate about bad weather and flooding and catastrophes and other things. But obviously, there must be lots of glimmers of hope in there as well. So in terms of what you see with your partners and so on, what something that has inspired you and sort of gives you strength to keep going on this in this space?
There is not like one particular person or organization that, you know, keeps me going. We're going back to the very start of our conversation, why I have come into the space, and it's really about people and the solutions, you know, believing in a purpose and making great things happen, sometimes with very little. And that's what keeps me positive. Our claim at Klima Now is actually we believe in solutions. And that's what keeps us going, because that's what we truly believe. We believe that, you know, a net zero transition is not a burden, but is a vision of a delightful future that has so many solutions that we don't know yet, and that has a quality of life we can only dream of now. And it's something I love looking towards. And so I don't find it that hard to stay motivated. I find it more frustrating having to lower those barriers in when convening people and having to have all those discussions on why not, or maybe later, or that's what I find more tedious. But the focus on solutions is something that carries me and I believe the team forward every day.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think there hasn't been a single day at ESME in 10 years when I have not learned something or been inspired by something. The people that we work with, the kind of things they do, how they do it, it's just an inspiration, but also it's really humbling, actually, totally humbling. And I learn every single day. So that's for me is one of the reasons. But in terms of kind of more broader philosophy, I have this saying, which I've used with my children and with lots of other things that I do, which is that there is a slice of heaven in every single thing that you do. And sometimes that slice is the whole pie. Sometimes it's really, 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 really thin. So days when, because it is a bit, sometimes it's a bit sort of overwhelming, just the bad news, is that I focus on that little slither of heaven that does exist somewhere. And I focus on that rather than the fact that the whole rest of the pie is doomsday scenario, and focus on that tiny thing. And often then that starts increasing. So the bit of pie, the golden thread, if you like, starts increasing. And that gives me energy again, just to say that, like, what else would I be doing? This is the best job I could possibly have if I want to try and make change happen. It's just, as you say, you just got to keep the faith and just keep going and be inspired by all the amazing stuff that's happening everywhere.
Thank you. And thank you both. And I think that's a perfect place to wrap up our conversation. And I think many people will take great inspiration from the two of you and the work you do to drive forward change in this space. So thank you for taking the time to be with us. Really appreciate it. I found that deeply fascinating and inspirational. There is a lot of difficult news about climate and nature all over the world at the moment. Olaf, what are your reflections on what Carolina and Natalie just shared with us?
Well, Børge, it's a deep inspiration. As it was said, philanthropists and investors and funders all over the place, I would wish that more organizations, philanthropic organizations and individual funders would really be ready to invest in the topic so that it really becomes a topic of major concern.
I couldn't agree more. And let's hope Caroline and Natalie can be a call to action and inspiration for other people generally, for philanthropists and funders. To everybody that's listened, thank you so much. We enjoyed that conversation a lot. Hope you did. And until next time.